Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we play old-time radio for you, fresh today as it was when they originally made it. Well, not quite, but it still sounds pretty good. Today, detectives in the form of Sam Spade and Philip Marlowe, and we'll have a little bit between Bogart, Bacall, and Jimmy Durante. That's coming up in about 30 minutes. Right now, let's get busy with Philip Marlowe and the Lady Killer from 1949.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. This time, inside of 2 hours, a lavish mansion seethed with suspicion, a sealed cabin filled with gas and an artist's retreat, and a corpse on the floor. All because one man was too good-looking to be true to anyone.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of mystery, comes his most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy as we present The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Lady Killer.
The longer I sat in my office with my feet up on the desk and thought about it, the more convinced I became. Paul Niles was unquestionably the handsomest man I'd ever seen. He had a face that belonged on a Greek god, only his features were better, more finely chiseled. They looked as though they'd been molded out of alabaster from a blueprint by some inspired genius. And the classic side view he presented made the great profile show up like a bowl full of shredded wheat. In fact, the guy was much too good to be true in more ways than one, which had been my original impression of Niles when I'd first met him, just 2 hours ago at the corner of Sunset and Cahuenga, and at his insistence had driven him around the quieter streets of Hollywood in my car while he tried to hire me. He was scared stiff, but that was all he would admit to, and as he talked, I wondered what it would be like to have a face like that. It must become quite a problem. Women cluttering up your life.
Marlowe, you're not listening to me. Unless you help me, I'm going to be killed. Soon, tomorrow, tonight, maybe in the next 10 minutes, I must have protection.
From what? Who's after you?
A girl. Her name is Nora Kirby. She's threatened my life, and now she's here in town. She actually intends to go through with it. I found out where she's staying. I went there to talk to her, but she was out.
Why is killing you so important to her?
Well, I don't even know for sure. It's something ridiculous.
Nora Kirby obviously doesn't think so. Let's have it, Niles. Why?
I can't tell you that.
I see. Also, I suppose you don't want to take this to the police where it belongs, and you can't give me the reason for that either.
Yes. I came to you because I need private help, and I'm willing to pay well for it. Now, you don't have to concern yourself with the reasons. Simply see that Nora doesn't get to me. Now, here, as a starter, here's $200 for just that.
Keep it. I only accept money from the people I work for.
You mean you won't help me?
I just want to know where I'm going before I start.
Now, wait.
Don't you get off here.
Don't you understand? My life's in danger. I'm scared.
Not enough to loosen your tongue, any. Here, this is as far as I go. But tell me one thing first, just for laughs. What business are you in?
Why, I'm a composer. I write music.
Mm-hmm. The way you said it, it's either a front or a hobby. How do you get your dough?
I have friends. Wealthy ones who have faith in me.
And that's more than I can say for Marlowe. So long, Mr. Niles. Go on. Out.
All right. But here, at least take my card, and please call if you change your mind. I'm desperate, Marlowe. I'll pay you even more if you'll only...
Goodbye, Mr. Niles. That was the way I'd left it 2 hours ago at 8. And I'd spent the time in between trying to referee a tug-of-war in progress with the feeling I had that I'd been stuffy on one end and my undernourished bank account on the other. And was slowly but surely getting no place. So when the break came, I grabbed at it. Hello, Marlowe speaking.
Marlowe, this is Paul Niles again.
Oh?
I've thought it over. I'll tell you everything if that's the only way. because I've got to have help before it's too late.
That's better. Where are you?
In my studio, 3893 Avenida del Sol.
3893. That's off Coldwater Canyon, isn't it?
Yes. Now get over here right away, will you? Wait a minute, Marlo. There's someone here. Somebody just came in now.
What? Niles?
Who's there? Who is it? Nora, is that you?
Oh! Niles! Oh! Niles! Niles' phone went dead. I hung up, ran to my car, and was headed for Coldwater Canyon before I stopped to think of what I'd heard on the telephone could very easily have been bait for a patsy routine. Because I had nothing more to go on now than before, except Niles' promise to tell all, and that I'd got no further than gunshots. But I was already well on one easy way to find out, so I corkscrewed my way over the mountains to Avenida del Sol and followed it to number 3893, which was a straight-up driveway etched narrowly into the hill face that ended on a gravel shelf just big enough for the redwood and glass studio. A generous helping of imported jungle for landscaping in a circular parking space. As my headlights slashed across the tangle of overhanging trees in the center, they trapped the figure of a woman running. She stopped, crouched, and looked back into the glare like a cat does, then darted to the darkness again. But I caught her at the corner of the house. Just a minute, baby. Not so fast on the curves.
Let me go. Let me go.
Not until we've been properly introduced and had a chance to talk a lot of things over, Nora.
Nora.
Yeah, Nora Kirby, girl with murder on her mind.
Oh, no, you got the wrong person. My name's not Nora, it's Lynn. I don't know anyone like that.
Lynn what?
Lynn Horton. Lynn Horton.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Lynn Horton, what's inside that got you so panicky you can hardly stand up? Is it Paul Niles?
Yes. I gotta get away from here.
And it actually happened, huh? He was shot. Is he dead?
I don't know, I think so. How did you know about it? Who are you?
Name's Marlowe. Come on, Lynn Horton. Let's take another look.
No, I couldn't bear it.
Can't see him through the window. It means you must have been inside.
Inside? No, I wasn't.
Now look, baby, you're too jittery to try to lie. Let's have the key. Come on, give. Oh. That's better. After you. Go on, inside. Now, where is it? Yeah.
Oh, Paul.
Come on, Lynn. Come over here away from me.
I can't believe it. I can't.
What's your connection with him?
I was just a friend. I tried to help him with his music.
Mm-hmm. The price on the merchandise you're wearing, you must be one of those mentioned.
What do you mean?
But you got dough and it shows. We'll skip that. Assuming you didn't kill him, you must have had some reason for showing up here tonight. What was it?
Well, I only wanted to... Did you hear that? Someone's outside.
Yeah, get the light.
Yeah. There, on the terrace, something moved down there.
I'm going out to see who it is. And listen, there's no such thing as welcome visitor just now, baby. So you stay here, understand? And don't budge. I felt my way out the door, down the stone steps toward where we'd seen the movement, and along the wall to the far end of the terrace. But there was no sound, nothing moved. Whoever had made the noise had gotten away clean. So I headed back for the house, and that's when I heard it. I started after it with my shin against the first rock garden. Stopped me cold. Ooh. Instead, I listened to her drive away. Called myself a few unpleasant names and concluded that Lynn Horton, or whatever her real name was, had been quite as scared as she acted. After I limped inside, turned on the light and reached for the phone, I stopped at the word Nora above a pretty girl's picture on a newspaper clipping sticking out of Paul Niles' pocket. It carried a New York dateline and said that Nora Kirby, convicted of manslaughter in a traffic accident, had been released after serving 3 years. At the bottom of the story, scrawled in ink, was the message... 3 years for something I didn't do, to get something I couldn't have. It's not fair, Paul, I'll be seeing you. It was signed Nora. I picked up the phone again, and a few minutes later, Detective Lieutenant Matthews at Homicide was up to date.
Okay, I'll be right out. Now, you say this girl, Nora Kirby, did it, Marlowe?
I said Paul Niles was expecting her to, and it looks like she did. They looked, there's another angle, though, the woman who just beat it away from here.
The one who called herself Lynn Barton?
Yeah. There's that somebody else who was snooping around outside, too.
Who also got away from you. You're doing real well, Marlo.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Will you see this joint, you'll understand. Besides, I'm in this for curiosity only. Now my paycheck got murdered, remember? And furthermore, I never have matches when I want them.
What'd you say?
I said I'm looking for some matches.
Yeah.
Oh, here's some. The strangest matches I've ever seen.
Well, what about them?
I got a velvet cover on them.
So what? A velvet book of matches.
Mm. Hey, Matthews, did you ever hear the name Negrotto?
Negrotto?
Yeah.
Sure. Abel Negrotto. Huh? He's a big name in the music publishing business. Made most of his fortune on records. Lives in Beverly Hills.
You know, I got a dandy hunch. I'm going to go have a talk with Mr. Negrotto, Lieutenant, okay?
On one condition. Be careful what you say, Marlowe. And keep in touch.
Good evening. You aren't Mr. Negrotto, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm Garrett Horton. Mr. Negrotto is busy.
Horton?
Yes. Something wrong with that?
No. No, it's a more common name than I suspected, that's all. Will you tell Mr. Negrotto I'd like to see him for a few minutes on an urgent matter? Name's Marlowe.
Perhaps you didn't understand me. Mr. Negrotto and I are in the middle of a business conference. We can't be disturbed.
No, you can't be disturbed. Well, no. Look, Mr. Horton, a man was murdered tonight, and one trail leads from the co-op straight to this front door. Either Negrotto talks to me here now or later at police headquarters. You decide.
Well, if that's where you feel, come in. You an officer?
Not exactly. I'm a private detective.
I see. Well, follow me, follow me.
He led the way through what looked like the outer lobby of the Taj Mahal and down a silk-padded corridor to a set of carved doors that would have fit any roundhouse in the country. When we walked in, a man glanced up from a stack of papers and with a pair of eyes that belonged on a shark, did his best to look a hole through me. Horton introduced us.
This is Mr. Marlowe, private detective.
Mr. Negrotto, I'm looking for a girl named Nora Kirby in connection with the murder of one Paul Niles tonight. She either committed the murder or knows who did because she was there and saw it.
And what exactly brings you to my house?
Well, I found this book of matches near the door of the dead man's studio. I think it's yours.
It is. Go on.
Any idea how it got there?
None whatever. And until you mentioned their names, I'd never heard of either Nora Kirby or Paul Niles.
How about you, Mr. Horton?
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, there's my wife.
Oh?
I'm sure you'll want to give her the third degree, too. Oh, just a moment. Lynn. Lynn, darling. Come in here, please. Lynn, this is Mr. Marlowe.
How do you do, Mr. Marlowe? I'm glad to know you, I'm sure.
Thanks. I'm pleased to meet you, Mrs. Negrotto.
Your brother and I have been trying to convince Marlowe here that we didn't commit murder tonight, but he thinks we did because he found this book of our matches near the corpse. Can you explain it, my dear?
Why, no. I can't imagine.
The man's name was Niles, Lynn. Paul Niles. Mean anything?
No, nothing.
How about Nora Kirby?
I don't think I've ever heard the name before.
Well, Marlowe, that would seem to take care of the book of matches.
Not completely. It was found at the house of the dead man, remember?
We've had hundreds of these made up. Passed them out freely. I think you've taken up quite enough of our time with this absurd business, Marlowe. So now I'll ask you to leave.
I'll show you out.
Don't bother. Now listen, Negrotto, and listen closely. I've been taking it easy so far, but somebody in this room is absolutely certain how those matches got out there. I know that for a fact. And I'm a private detective. Don't forget. So if you suddenly remember something that needs talking over, I'll be in my office for 1 hour, but not one single minute longer. Good night, all.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, every Sunday afternoon, CBS brings you two outstanding programs of music. Gems from the great composers, played by the Symphonette, and the sweet, memorable songs of the outstanding modern composers and semi-classicists, sung by the Choraleers. Each program is designed especially for fine Sunday afternoon listening. Hear both the Symphonette and Choraleers this Sunday afternoon on most of these same CBS stations. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Lady Killer.
When I started back to my office on Cahuenga, I figured that there was an even chance that the double talk I'd left in my wait might stack up in the center of the Negrotto living room floor like so much dynamite, which, if touched off by the book of matches, could cause an explosion that would jar loose a few facts about the lives and loves of the late Paul Niles. Facts that would make finding Nora Kirby and clearly understanding her motives something less than impossible. And 20 minutes later, when I was slouched behind my desk and listening to the staccato report of a pair of high heels clicking sharply toward my door, I had a hunch that my theory of violent detonation was not just wishful thinking. When the door opened without the formality of the knock, that hunch turned a sure thing because the visitor was the not-quite-lady called Lynn.
Mr. Marlowe.
And before she could speak her piece, the phone rang and sure thing graduated to cinch. It was another Negretto, the one named Abel.
Marlowe, I suppose it's stupid of me to make this call, but frankly, your visit here has left me curious. You have a minute?
Yeah, I think so. Hold a wire, will you? I need a light. With you in a second, Mrs. Negrano.
All right, but what I have to say is important, Marlowe. So make it fast, will you?
Just as fast as I can. I don't think your husband has much to say to me.
Husband?
Mm-hmm.
That's Abel you're talking to?
Yeah. Now, do you mind handing me those matches there? Thanks. Hello! Sorry to have kept you waiting, Mr. Negrano. I never seem to be able to hang on to matches.
That's odd. You apparently did all right on that score tonight, Marlowe.
Is that the reason for the call?
More or less. Marlowe, you know as well as I do that servants, getter, anyone who's ever been in my home could have left those matches near the body of that Paul Niles.
That's right, Mr. Negrotto, anybody. Which also includes you, your wife, your brother-in-law, and others in the family I've still to meet. What's your point, please? I'm in a hurry.
Very well. Marlowe, I called to find out if you're holding anything back from me. If this murder concerns the Negrottos beyond the appearance of those matches.
I can't say.
Because there is something.
Because I don't know. Anything else?
No, there isn't. Yes, Marlowe, there is.
Oh?
To be honest, I admire the way you handle the situation. What's your address? I may have work for you soon, tonight.
Thanks, Mr. Negrotto, but I don't think I'll be available. At least not till I get through with the job I'm on.
Which is what?
Handling dynamite while I play with books of matches. Good night, sir.
What did he want, Marlowe?
Among other things, an expressed desire to hire me.
To do what?
Report on you, I suppose. He didn't say.
What makes you think that's what he wanted?
Addition, Mrs. Negrotto. A rich old husband, a beautiful but bored young wife, and an unemployed Adonis always add up the same way. Also, you were here in my office just about Clinch's things, not to mention your presence near the corpse, the key you used.
And I've heard enough, Marlowe. Look, I didn't want to get mixed up with Paul. I couldn't help myself. I swear I couldn't. He was different, Marlowe. Handsome. More charm than I'd ever known in anyone.
Yeah, real lady killer, I know. What are you getting at?
Just this. I'll pay you any price you name. Only don't tell Abel that I had anything to do with Niles. He's a jealous man, Marlowe. Insanely jealous. If he knew about us, he'd...
Kill Mrs. Negrano?
I don't know. Marlowe... What do you want?
Right now, everything you know about Nora Kirby.
But I've never heard of her before tonight.
You're lying.
No, I'm not. It's the truth. Now, what do you want?
Nothing. Good night.
You mean you won't say anything? Oh, Marlowe, I don't know how to thank you.
Don't try. Also, don't get mixed up about me, baby. The fact that I won't blackmail you doesn't mean I don't like you. And the door, Mrs. Negrotto, leave it open on your way out, will you? I'm expecting another visitor.
No, my husband.
No, just another man. The anchor man and the triumvirate I once left some dynamite with. I won't bother explaining that. Goodbye, Mrs. Negrotto. You great, big, beautiful doll. Oh. Come on in, Mr. Horton. I've been waiting for you.
Why, Mr. Marlowe? Something I said or didn't say at the house?
Not exactly. It's more a matter of intuition, high explosives, and the fact that both your brother-in-law and sister have already paid their respects. Now, what can I do for you?
I'm not at all sure.
It's the first time.
I'm only here because I noticed something very strange about the way my sister looked at you when you spoke of the murder of this Paul Niles. When she left the house shortly after you did, I followed her here.
All of which makes the next question, why, Mr. Horton?
Because I don't trust her. And more important, every penny I own is tied up in a business venture of mine that her husband is backing. She originally met Abel through me, and if she should in some way be in trouble, the kind of trouble that her husband wouldn't put up with, I might suffer for it in the long run right along with her.
Uh-huh. And by the trouble, Mr. Horton, you're referring to something specific, I think.
I am. Mm-hmm. Lynn has had a very, a very mixed up background, Marlowe, so it's entirely feasible that in some way she's connected with this Nora you spoke of who killed Paul Niles.
You mean as an accomplice or even as accessory before or after the fact? Pretty thoughts about your own sister.
Which I can't help.
I doubt that you have anything to worry about, Mr. Horton. However, I will say this, that if Nora Kirby hadn't gotten to Paul Niles sooner or later, you would have had plenty to worry about.
You mean that...
I mean that now's a great time for you to go home and sit on your investment. All is well, Mr. Horton, for the time being. A moment after Horton left the office, I came to the hollow conclusion that although my little bombshell had exploded on schedule, damages had been light and had jarred loose neither fact nor fancy about the late Paul Niles and much less about the elusive Miss Nora Kirby. So my next move had to be a second trip to Avenida del Sol and a report to Detective Lieutenant Matthews, which is what I was about to do when it came from someplace outside, long and loud. I ran the length of the corridor outside my door, then bellowed down the single flight of stairs to the street where in the half light of a distant lamppost, I saw the shadowed figure of a girl slip behind my car, then dart toward a storefront nearby. I started after her and stopped at a noise behind me, which was a...
Oh, mistake!
Pull yourself together.
Ooh.
Let's go, fella. Come on.
Oh, it's you. You're the one who screamed?
Screamed? Honey, you have got it bad. Listen, This is just Sally.
Hello, Sally.
Relax, honey. You're lucky a cop didn't come along first. Being drunk is one thing. The DTs is something else, I know. Last year I was in the same shape and it took me 3 months
now,
to
wait a minute. Hold it, will you? Look, I was slugged, not slipped a Mickey.
Slugged? Honest?
Slugged, honest. If you don't mind giving me a hand, I'll get up. Ooh.
Easy, ooh. Honey. Here, let me help you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ooh.
I figured you all wrong. Never thought you was slugged. Any idea who done it?
No, no. Look, tell me, didn't you see anything before you found me, I mean? Didn't hear a girl scream, see her run away?
Nothing at all.
Oh.
Honey, you must have been out longer than you thought. Maybe.
Hmm?
Hey, look, this card here on the ground.
Yeah?
What's your name, honey?
Philip Marlowe, why?
Why, I tell you why. I'll tell you more than that. You know who slugged you, honey? A polite guy. A very polite guy who left his card, you engraved and all. Paul Niles, know him?
I used to. Won't work, Sweets. Niles gave me that card earlier tonight. Must have dropped it just now. Also, Niles is dead and not you.
And what?
The back of that card there in pencil. Give me that, will you? Gray's Motel, 1000 Santa Monica Boulevard, Bungalow 9. Sweetheart, I may have something good here.
About who slugged you, you mean?
Better than that, about who killed Niles and where she can be found. Goodbye, love. Here's five for your trouble and bless you. As I piled into my car, I knew that putting Niles' conversation piece about having just come from Nora's place when he first met me, together with the address on the back of his card, was taking a lot for granted. But I sold myself that playing a long shot was better than not betting on anything at all, and I kept driving fast. When I came to a stop away from the place, which was run down, spread out, and quiet, I had a feeling that what I had earmarked long shot was quickly moving up to even money. And when I was standing next to the motel bungalow Mark 9, that feeling became fact because inside and piled in an awkward heap on the floor was a still form of the girl the newspaper clipping had labeled Nora Kirby. It was another full second before I realized something even more important. On a hot night in August, there wasn't a single window open. And Nora Kirby was huddled close to a gas heater that was on but showed no flame. I picked up a stone at my feet, took one deep breath, and then crashed the pane of glass, unlocked the window, and got inside and over the girl, who I figured was taking the hasty way out of a murder that she no doubt had a very personal reason to commit. I stopped figuring when I was nearly next to her. I knew that she was still alive. And that a man gripping a .45 in his hand had just opened the front door.
Don't make another move, Marlowe, or I'll kill you.
Well, comes the switch. Brother-in-law Garrett Horton. I never would have guessed.
You wouldn't have had to try if you kept your nose clean. No, get away from her.
Why? So she can die as a suicide, which the police will chalk off as logical, since she's already wanted for murder that you no doubt committed?
Exactly. Murder I committed because there isn't anything worse one can do to a blackmailer.
So that's it, Niles. The lady killer was blackmailing your sister. You found out and killed him before he could cause too much trouble. Family trouble that would end up hurting the good thing you've got with husband Abel, huh?
Yes. No, shut up and get away from her. We're going outside.
You're kidding.
Marlowe, I'll shoot you if you don't start walking.
You're still kidding. Orton, you can't kill me without killing yourself. This room is jammed tight with the gas you turned on after you brought her in here unconscious. After you sapped her outside of my place because she was on her way to see me and tell me that you had murdered Niles. The flash from that gun in your hand, Orton will blow us all to bits. Face it, brother. For you, it's all or nothing at all. Go on, shoot. Go on, try it!
I can't.
please report to Ward 21?
You can see Miss Kirby now, Mr. Marlowe. She's going to be all right, but hold her down to a few minutes, will you?
All right, Doctor, just a few minutes. Hello, Nora. Been a long time getting together, huh?
Yeah, but not through any fault of mine, Mr. Marlowe. I followed you from the moment you left Paul's place. But I wanted to see you alone, so I kept waiting for my chance.
Which was canceled out when Horton spotted you after he left my office. You ought to learn to run faster, honey. He had to take time to knock me out, and still he caught up with you.
So did you, I'm very glad to say. Even though you probably weren't trying to save me at the time, were you?
Frankly, honey, until Horton stepped back into that bungalow to keep me from interfering with things, I figured you were it.
I might have been, Marlowe. If Paul hadn't been killed just before I got to him, at least I'd have hit him with something hard. I had motive, you know.
Yeah, I read all about it. 3 years in prison for something you didn't do. But tell me, if Niles framed you and you knew it, why didn't you go to the police? He couldn't have been that irresistible.
But he was, Marlowe. And more. As a matter of fact, he didn't frame me in the first place. It was my own idea. You see, Paul was driving the car when we had that accident 3 years ago. Not me.
You switched places with him?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
He'd already had his license revoked for reckless driving. They'd have sent him away for 10 years at least. As against my 3. Believe it or not, at the time, I couldn't think of waiting that long for him.
No?
No, Marlo.
Hello, Matthews.
We checked the story. It's true enough, even if it's the kind of thing we're not supposed to be able to understand.
Of course. Paul was strictly a lady killer, remember?
Yeah, so he was. Well, I guess that ties everything in, huh?
Not quite, Phil. I just finished taking a statement from Horton. There's one more question. Whatever made you so sure that in a room half filled with gas, a gun exploding would blow everything up?
Oh, well, that's simple. I
You what?
Well, I figured, you see. I thought that, Yes, well, good night, Miss Kirby.
Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
So long, Lieutenant.
So long, Lucky.
By the time I got back to the quiet of my apartment on Franklin, it was a little better than 2 in the a.m. As I sank into an easy chair without bothering to turn on the lights, I realized that for the moment I was tired. Tired of people. Their troubles, their petty little jealousies. Lady killer. What makes one man a lady killer and another... Oh, well. I lit a last cigarette and I thought about the mountain of trouble a classic Grecian profile had built for Paul Niles. I stopped thinking when the flare of the match in my hand showed in a mirror opposite me. The mirror that also reflected the face of the guy holding the match. It was a long way from being an Adonis. In fact, he was slightly on the mud fence side. And at the moment, glad of it.
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and crime's most deadly enemy, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Gene Bates, Paul Dubov, Ted Von Eltz, Ann Morrison, Don Randolph, and Edmund MacDonald. The special music is by Richard Orant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
It started with a man on trial for his life, and an A1 citizen eager to testify. But there it was interrupted. And it wasn't until I found a corpse in a bubbling bath, gunplay in the woods, and lots of blackmail, that the real eager witness had a chance to talk.
It will be New Orleans, city of romance and drama, which sends its detectives into action on gangbusters tonight. The superintendent of the New Orleans Police Department himself will narrate gangbusters' amazing story, The Case of the Sledgehammer Sigh. You'll also find Basil Rathbone engaged in another of his exciting, exotic mysteries. So be sure to hear them on most of these same CBS stations. Gangbusters and Basil Rathbone's newest mystery adventure. In fact, stay tuned right now for the Gangbusters program. Yes, it follows immediately on most of these same stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Now Jimmy Durante will try to put some moves on Lauren Bacall, and Bogey's in the room, too. So let's find out how this is going to end up, huh?
Well, gentlemen of the AEF, meet once more the newest glamour girl of the screen, the star of To Have and Have Not, Miss Lauren Bacall.
Thank you very much, Bob.
I might as well warn you right now, Lauren. There's a gentleman here tonight who's very much smitten with you.
Really? Why does he like me?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it's because you're a girl.
That's funny. I thought Bob Hope was out of town.
No. This isn't Bob. Bob is still in his reservation at Griffith Park. This happens to be Jimmy Durante.
I didn't know Jimmy was a ladies' man.
Well, he isn't, but he imagines that... You go for two-fisted he-men, so he's decided to become one. Please bear with him.
Oh, don't worry. I'll show him a good time.
Good. Jimmy! Jimmy Durante!
Did someone call for Rick?
Jimmy, I'd like you to meet Miss Lauren Bacall. Mr. Durante. Lauren?
How do you do, Mr. Durante?
How do you do? Kiss me, kiddo.
Why, Mr. Durante, I thought you were a gentleman.
Not me. I'm the Bogart type. You see, I'm a mug.
You certainly have.
Touché, kiddo, touché. But let's cut out the small talk and live life to the full. I take my fun where I find it. And sister, now I've found it.
Say, you are the Humphrey Bogart type, aren't you? I had no idea you were so messy. So overpowering.
How do you like that? I was anticipating trouble.
Oh, Jimmy, take me in your big, strong arms. Crush me to your manly chest and squeeze me till there isn't a breath left in your body.
Move over. Move over, Sinatra. You're going to have company. Come here, Slim.
Oh, darling, I want you to kiss me, kiss me, kiss me, kiss me.
Sorry, only one to a customer. I don't throw those lips around, you know. Let this one do you. Well, Slim, how was it?
Were you ever bit by a dead bee?
I love a dame with a sense of humor. Come here, Slim, and I'll sting you again. Company? At a time like this, come on over in the corner where we can be alone, kiddo. Hey, Marshal, answer the door. I'm gonna be busy.
Why, it's Humphrey Bogart.
Hey, isn't that Lauren Bacall over in the corner with her arms around the guy?
Oh, don't worry, Bogey. She's just giving him a brush off.
Yeah, that kind of a broom I should have.
Don't get excited. It's only Jimmy Durante. He's trying to prove to himself he's a ladies' man by acting tough. Lauren is just playing along with him.
Oh, I see. Well, I think I'll go over and throw a little scare into him. Hey, Durante.
Don't bother me. I'm busy.
Oh, yeah? Well, reach for the ceiling.
A babe like McCall right next to me, and he wants me to reach for the ceiling.
Jimmy, don't you know who that is? That's Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, I didn't recognize him without Peter Lorre.
Durante, keep away from my girl or I'll punch you under the nose.
Under the nose?
Don't you mean on his nose?
No, I don't like easy targets.
Don't fight, boys.
There's only one way to settle this thing, Durante, and that's man to man.
Okay, I'm ready. Where's your
My what?
Where's the man that represents you?
You better. Better not fool with me, Durante. I'm a pretty hard guy.
Oh, yeah? I'm pretty hard myself.
I could break you in two with my bare hands.
I could break you in two with my bare hands.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I bet you my mob's tougher than your mob.
Yes. Well, every man in my mob is a scoundrel.
Well, we're all ruffians, so there.
I've had enough of this. Goodbye, you two killers.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah, I thought you wanted a date tonight.
I do. I'm going inside right now and call Roddy McDowell.
Now, gang, I'd like to have you meet one of your favorite film players and a stout fella, Mr. Edward Arnold.
Thank you, and hello, everybody.
Edward Arnold, what are you doing here? I know you heard Lauren Bacall was here on. I know you heard Barney.
Yeah, I know all about it.
Wait a minute. Let me get this line.
You want it out? All right. Let's take it out.
He knows it's a laugh. I know you heard Lauren Bacall was on, and you came down to muscling on my territory.
Well,
and with that, we set the stage for our next detective, which is Sam Spade. The Chateau MacLeod Caper from 1951.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective.
Sam Spade Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
How was your vacation, Sam?
Who said it was a vacation?
Well, I thought you said you were going skiing for a weekend.
With me, F, it's always work. Do you know you can get killed on skis?
If you say so, Sam.
Yes.
Most people just break their legs.
Most people pick some easy little slope, the cowards. But I know a ski run up near a town called Lucerne that's sudden death.
I know a ski run called the Backbreaker.
Really? How dull.
And one they named Suicide Drop.
Effie, stop trying to top me. You just can't. This was the deadliest ski country ever seen. You just sit there while I do a Christiania swing down Market Street, a Geländer sprung up the stairs, and a Telmark right through the door with a tail I took out of the deep freeze only last night. The Chateau MacLeod Caper.
For NBC, William Spear, radio's outstanding producer, director of mystery and crime drama, brings you the greatest private detective of them all in The Adventures of Sam Spade.
Effie!
Oh, Sam! Yeah. Take off those skis.
I just wanted to prove I could do it. I did a herringbone up the stairs.
And those clothes. I'll just bet you rented all those things, Sam. You were never in the snow country at all.
So, you don't believe me, huh? Well, here, doubting Effie, I brought you proof. And don't tell me I rented this.
A snowball?
Yes.
Sam! A real snowball!
Yes, I brought back two of them in a thermos box.
Where's the other one?
I threw it at a policeman. It was a freezy, you know, soaked with water and ice.
Oh, Sam, you're wonderful.
Mm.
I can't believe that you had trouble this weekend.
Oh, no? You cut that snowball open and you'll find a blood-stained bullet inside of it. And behind the bullet lies a tail. Ready?
I'm always ready, Sam.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Date, fill it in to Sierra County Sheriff's Office, Lucerne, California. From Samuel Spade, San Francisco. License number 137596. Subject, the Chateau MacLeod Caper. Dear Sheriff, you run a neat little county up there at Sierra, and I hate to be snide, but when my train steamed into the cold mountain air of your lovely little village of Lucerne, I knew the chill of death was afoot. It had to be. The place was too beautiful to last. The background hills were right out of the Alps. The snow from Grandma Moses and the rustic buildings that snuggled under the mantle of white were just too cute for words. It was abnormally perfect. Something had to give.
Hello there.
Well,
the on the young man who got off the train. Are you for McLeod?
Well, I'm supposed to find a Chateau McLeod.
Oh, what do you know? I got the right man on the first try.
Good.
Rufus sent me down to pick you up.
You could pick me up almost any time.
Well, that took a little chill off the day. Shall we go?
Ooh, mush. Mush.
We glided out of the station, runners squeaking on snow, the soft pad of hooves, and the jangle of merry bells. We had a bearskin lap robe. It was a short bear, so we had to move close. Her cheeks were apple red, and her silk brown hair flowed in the spanking breeze. Oh, it was a scene that will forever be etched in my memory.
Rufus tells me you're an advertising genius.
Well, I have placed a few ads in my day, mostly help wanted.
Aha, don't kid me. He says you're going to put the McLeod canneries right on top with a new campaign.
On top.
You know, you're supposed to have a big name.
Just eight letters, Sam Spade.
Oh? Well, I'm Rita Parker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to be Rufy's girlfriend. Of course, I think it's only to make his wife mad. Oh. But it's fun up here.
Yeah, so this is my first trip.
Oh, well, then you're in for a treat. That is, if abnormal psychology appeals to you.
What does that mean?
The McLeod guest register is always full of dynamite.
Oh.
For example, this weekend reads thusly. Rufus McLeod with half of the money in the world trying to get the other half.
Good.
His wife, who has an interlocutory decree.
Mrs. Interlocutor, huh?
Yeah, Cora.
Yes.
Her boyfriend, Paul Endicott, gigolo type.
Mm.
Charlie Allison, co-worker and friend to Rufus. He's a food technician or something dull.
Dull.
And then there's Tozier Svenborg, ski instructor, who comes down like a wolf on the fold.
Paul
and people like that.
Yes, well, I'll never remember all the names. I'm in the ad game, you know. It's initials to me. I call people, R.L., T.S., N.T.G., and, you know.
Well, the names don't mean a thing. Just remember this. Every 30 seconds, duck.
I beg your pardon? The McLeod estate was 8 miles out of town, and it seemed we were there in no time at all. Rita Parker hustled the Alpine buckboard and mare into a stable while I went up to the chateau to meet my employer, Rufus McLeod. It was more of a Swiss chalet, you know, where the second floor is larger than the first. And I guarantee that no one in Switzerland could have afforded this chalet, even with the second floor the same size as the first. I walked in and found Rufus, big and red-faced, standing in front of a fireplace that could easily have roasted a brace of oxen, rump to rump.
Of course, you're Sam Spade.
I am, Mr. McLeod.
Well, you came at an opportune time. There's
good.
No one around to overhear our conversation. I suppose you wonder why I hired a detective for a place like this.
Well, not especially. I go where the people go. And the money.
You'll be paid well for your time and trouble. I must be quick. In essence, this is my situation.
Yes.
Earlier this week, I received an anonymous letter saying that if I invited the guest list I'd planned for this weekend, there might be serious trouble. Here's the letter. Keep it to yourself. It's a Los Angeles postmark.
I see. Well, we might start by tracing down this typewriter through an L.A. detective agency.
Every one of my charming guests is from Los Angeles. One of them wrote it, if you ask me.
Very likely.
I want to know who wrote it, if I can, but more than that, I wonder what serious trouble the writer is referring to.
The girl you sent to pick me up said you had a very volatile group of people assembled.
Yeah, perhaps they're high-strung individuals, but they're civilized. I'm sure their conflict would never get beyond a cutting phrase or two, or perhaps a punch thrown here or there.
Well, then you really don't believe you'll have any trouble?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it would be advisable to have a man like yourself around.
Yes.
One who deals in trouble professionally. Perhaps if things do get out of line, you can help repair the damages or even prevent things from occurring.
Well, I'll do my best, Mr. McLeod, but it's not easy to look for something when you don't know what you're looking for.
Oh, here they come, Spade.
Oh.
Back from the ski runs.
Oh,
I told them you were handling an advertising campaign for my canneries.
What? Well. They came stamping in, pulling off gloves, unzipping parkas, and if it hadn't been for the grown-up dialogue, looking all the world like a group of carefree children. It was hard to believe that the chill of death was also in them even then. I couldn't keep my eyes off one of the particular members of the group, Mossberg ski boots, Chinese vermilion downhill pants, and a candy-striped parka, which she now pulled over her lovely head. The sweater she wore underneath was, I'm sure, designed for someone much smaller. A dachshund, perhaps?
Is this the advertising man you've been telling me about, Ruth?
Oh, Mr. Samuel Spade, my half-wife, Cora.
Half? Well, how do you do?
Glad you came, Sam. We can always use another sport in the crowd. Hey, everybody, shut up! Introducing the incomparable, fabulous Mr. Samuel Spade.
Yes. Hiya, Sam.
I'll give him to you fast, Sam. Me, Paul Endicott, Rita Parker, Charlie Allison, Toja Svenborg. Charlie's the one who doesn't ski.
I'll take snowshoes any day.
I can't get anywhere in snowshoes.
You've heard, perhaps, of the tortoise and the hare.
Rufus, ring for some drinks. Tom and Jerry's, hot toddies, coffee, grog, something.
Yeah, we're having hot buttered rum. The stuff's warming in the kitchen.
Well, get it up.
Right away, Cora.
And as for the rest of you, ready? A one, a two, a three.
Oh, fill the stocks, dear old man. Shout till the rafters ring. Stand and drink a toast once again. Let every loyal Maine man sing.
Oh, do-dee-do-dee-do. They took up the song with a gusto, lifting imaginary drinks into the air, and it was all very jolly. For a party that was supposed to be fraught with danger, this one certainly started out in just the opposite direction. The drinks came, and things got even merrier. Lunch was served, and afterwards I slipped into some outdoor gear and strapped on some skis. Everybody scattered different directions. Rufus McLeod and I skied to a place 3 miles away called the Halfway Cabin. Between the chateau and the cabin was a small lake called Royal Lake, completely frozen over. Rufus stood in front of the cabin, firing a 30-30 at a target set up down in the woods to the east.
What do you see through the glasses, Spade?
Two bullseyes and nothing outside of the 8 ring. That's great offhand shooting at this range and standing on skis.
Well, I can do much better than that. Watch this. Mm-hmm. See that silver tip on that big Norwegian fir over there?
Yeah.
I'll cut it off.
Hey, look out!
What? What? Well, he came swooping out of nowhere, Spade. I swear he did.
Well, I think you hit him. Who is it?
It's Paul Endicott. No, he's up.
Good.
There's Cora with him.
Well, you told me nobody was supposed to be skiing in that area.
Yeah, they're not.
Well, here he comes, and he looks plenty mad.
What do I care about him? He's just after Cora for the money I give her, that's all.
You might have killed me, you stupid fool.
You weren't supposed to be skiing there, Endicott, and it was an accident.
Well, that was no accident.
All right. Knock off the punches.
You keep out of this. You keep out, or I'll throw one at you.
Oh, that I'd love.
Oh, Paul, now stop it, and the rest of you quit acting like children.
Your boyfriend threw a sucker punch at me, Cora, and even if he is my guest, there's a limit to hospitality.
I don't call one punch an even trade for a 30-30 bullet.
You weren't hit, so don't start crying.
Rufus, I've the feeling you wouldn't mind if he were hit. You wouldn't mind at all. Paul, I've just decided I don't like you without a mustache.
Well, from then on, everybody dropped the pretense and you knew where you stood. And it was chilly, too. Later in the day, we were all back at the chateau again, and Paul Endicott wove his delicate variation on his main theme.
I'll knock your block off.
I tell you, Mr. Endicott, you have some delusions.
I have no delusions, Tozier. I've seen the way you look at Cora, the way you two are always trying to lose me on the trails.
Some people ski faster than others.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. The next time you try to wolf this girl, it's going to be your last.
I'm nobody's wolf. I'm a ski instructor. That is what I was hired for.
Well, stick to what you were hired for. Knock off the extracurricular activities.
I don't have to take this kind of talk from you.
Anything you'd like to do about it?
As a matter of fact, there is.
Fellas.
Get it.
Boys.
Oh,
men.
Wait a minute. Stop it. Fellas. Stop it.
Yes.
I'll never speak to either
fellas.
One of you again.
You,
Sam.
You.
Sam.
Yes, you want me to stop them, Mrs. McLeod?
No, I want you to take me out of here.
Oh, all right. All right. Well...
Let's put on our skis and get out of here.
Okay, here, I'll help you.
Oh, thank you. You're such a gentleman.
Well, even so, I'll take a minute.
Ready?
Yes. There we are. Now, where are we heading, Mrs. McLeod?
Oh, I thought we might go out to the boathouse. It's on the southern tip of Royal Lake. It's only a mile and a half.
Nothing.
And my name is Cora. I'm not really Mrs. McLeod anymore.
Well, that's kind of rough on you, isn't it? Bringing your new boyfriend around all of your ex-husband's friends.
Well, I like it up here. Rufus likes to have me. And they're not all against Paul. At least they weren't. But he's on the defensive so much, he's going to make enemies of all of them.
Yes, he's off to a rousing start, I'd say.
Do you know something, Sam?
Hmm?
I don't care about Paul Endicott, really.
Hmm?
Or Rufus McLeod, or Toja Svenborg, or anybody. I just care about Cora McLeod.
Well, now that's a good, honest answer. You know, most people wouldn't be that frank.
But, Sam.
Yeah?
I haven't known you long.
Well,
I like your style.
Style?
I could care about you.
It broke my heart not to stop right there on the trail and kiss her because that's what she wanted me to do. So that's why I didn't do it. And I'll never turn down anything better. Well, next scene, a boathouse. And when we got there, it was not at all the way I thought. A food technician and close friend of Rufus McLeod was there, working on something that baffled me at first.
It's an ice boat, Mr. Spade.
That's what it is.
Belongs to Rufus.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen one up close before.
I'd take you for a ride, but this one needs a lot of work before anybody could use it. I'm just puttering. Mm-hmm. What prompted you to come out here, Cora?
Because Paul and Tosha Finbar got in a fight over me, and I got tired of the whole thing. Sam and I went out for some air.
Oh. Well, glad you did. I was getting a bit lonesome. You see, Sam, they always leave me in a cloud of snow on their skis, and I just plod along on snowshoes all by myself.
Well, maybe we can go walking together sometime. I used to be able to shake a pretty good snowshoe.
It's a deal. Tomorrow morning, I'll show you the place.
Sam, I think I'll stick around here and help Charlie with the ice boat.
Oh.
Unless you're crazy about ice boats, why don't you go back to the chateau? We'll be there in time for dinner.
Well, I don't need any engraved exhortation. I hope you catch a common cold. The trouble with that girl was that she only wanted one man at a time around her. Back at the chateau, there was no one but the cook. The Marjorie Main part. Too tall. As supper time approached, Rufus came in. Then Rita, then Cora, then Allison, and finally Tozier, in that order. And the order is important. Because, you see, nowhere in the list is the name of Paul Endicott. He didn't come in for supper, nor for the next 3 hours. It was dark by then, and Rufus McLeod was worried about Endicott. So we fanned out in a searching party. I was alone when I found him. He was lying in the snow, 300 yards west of the halfway cabin. There was a 30-30 slug in him. Period. End of Paul Endicott.
You are listening to the weekly adventure of radio's most famous detective, Sam Spade. This Sunday, Cary Grant and Betsy Drake star in the second of the new Mr. and Mrs. Blanding series over most of these NBC stations. The delightful tribulations of Jim Blandings and his wife Muriel as they built their famous dream house entertained millions as a novel and then as a motion picture. And now you can follow the further adventures of Mr. and Mrs. Blandings every Sunday on NBC. And Sunday also means your weekly visit with the hilarious Harrises on the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show. And now back to the Chateau McLeod caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
There were no ski marks near the body of Paul Endicott, just his own. Somebody had drawn a bead on him in the dusk from some distance. I started to look for the rest of the searching party and then changed my mind. If the body of Endicott wasn't found, the murderer might wonder what happened to it, get worried, and make a mistake. So I picked him up, carried him to a small cave I found, covered the entrance with snow, brushed over the ski marks, and went back to the chateau. One by one, they all showed up, discouraged.
We can't give up. We have to keep looking.
I know how you feel, Cora, darling. It's too dark. We'll try tomorrow.
Oh, don't worry about him. Paul can take care of himself.
How can he take care of himself, Miss Parker, if he got lost?
Who said he got lost?
I am assuming.
I think we're all assuming too much. I'm sure that it's nothing to worry about. If I know Paul, he'll show up tomorrow with some tall tale to tell. What do you think, Mr. Spade?
What does an advertising executive know?
Cora, your manners. A sponsor might be listening.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry, Sam. I'm upset.
Okay. Frankly, I don't know what to think. But if I were a detective, I'd hazard a guess that Paul met with foul play.
Oh, nonsense, Spade, nonsense. Come on, everybody, let's have a drink and have some fun. Paul will be back, and even if he isn't, who really cares?
Scotch for me.
And I guess nobody cared. Rufus was a little more jolly than usual, and the drinks began to dispel the gloom. It was as if Paul Endicott never had existed. It began to get late, and the bizarre wake broke up. Everybody went to bed, including me.
I lay there fully dressed, looking up at the beam ceiling for an hour. About then, my doorknob turned and the door slid open and shut. Someone moved quietly to my bed as I was sliding my .38 out of its holster.
Hmm? It's me, Rita.
Oh.
Are you awake?
Yeah, I wasn't even under the covers.
Mind if I sit down here?
Not a bit.
Sam.
Hmm?
Sam, I'm scared. I wish I could leave here.
Oh, what's the matter?
Paul's dead. I know he is. He didn't mean anything to me one way or the other, but I know he's dead.
Anything to back up your feeling?
I guess not. It's just something I'm sure of.
Why'd you come to me?
Because you're really a detective, and I know it.
Oh, me?
Now, you handled a case for my father once. You just don't remember me.
All right, I'm a detective. Rufus hired me because he expected trouble.
Sam, I'll tell you something about Paul.
Yeah?
Cora didn't really like him. They were always fighting.
She only cares about herself, so she said. Tell me, what kind of a car does Paul drive?
It's a yellow convertible, but it's still in the garage. I checked.
Any other cars missing?
No, they're all there. Oh, and I found out something else.
What?
Before supper, there was a gun missing from Rufus's gun rack. It's back now.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
That's all I know, Sam, except that Paul's dead. I know it. I wish I'd never come up here.
After she left, I dressed for outdoors and climbed through the bedroom window. It was still and quiet, and it was a quarter moon when I skied away from the chateau. I wanted to look the land over myself before the next day, when the clues, if any, were trampled into the snow. When I passed the northern tip of Royal Lake on the trail to the halfway cabin, I saw a new set of ski tracks heading into the woods where I had found Endicott's body. I followed them, and they went right to the cave where I'd hidden him. And he was gone. I was standing there, pondering this, when I thought I saw something move in the trees to the west of me. I stood stock still. That was a mistake. The bullet splintered a tree next to me, and I shoved off as fast as I could. There was no second shot. I circled around in the trees trying to catch sight of someone. Nothing. I kept in the shadows and made for the halfway cabin. It was dark and quiet, at least until I opened the door. I tried, but he had the advantage of surprise and some kind of a club. I ended up on the floor with someone sitting on my chest.
All right, I have your gun. You make one wrong move, Spade, and I'll use it.
It's got bullets in it and a hair trigger, so be careful.
We could use a little light. As you see, there's Paul Endicott's body.
Yeah. Why did you find him, Tozier? You're only putting a noose around your neck.
You're a very perceiving man, Mr. Spade. How do you figure I did it?
I talk better on my feet.
Just remember the gun.
If you didn't kill him, how else would you know where the body was?
Because I know this country like the back of my hand. He had to be somewhere. You are the killer, Mr. Spade.
Me?
Why, I do not know. You found the body before anyone else could. Hid it, then clumsily tried to hide your tracks.
Don't be silly. Why would I come back?
A murderer always worries about his crime. Did he forget something? Was something left undone? It's natural.
It sounds good, except it isn't true. You couldn't pin it on me in a month of Sundays. But somebody might just tie it on to you.
That's what you think. Do you know what I'm going to do now?
I wouldn't want to guess. The shots came pouring in through the window and Tozier Svenborg went down. I saw the flash of a face outside and was gone. I kicked at the lamp, threw the place into darkness, and lay on the floor. Then I crawled over to Svenborg and took my gun back.
Well, that was a surprise. It hurt quite a bit.
Where'd you get it?
Oh, somewhere in the back.
Let me see. It's at the shoulder level. But he won't die anyway.
I'm afraid I misjudged you, Mr. Spade. Go after him. Go after him and catch whoever it was.
I can't leave you here.
I'll take care of myself. Just leave me your gun for protection.
No, I'll stay.
Go, please, while there's time. Or are you afraid?
I was, but I gave him my gun and left. Outside, there were many ski tracks, but a fresh set led left from the halfway cabin down. They went right to the edge of Royal Lake and then stopped. There were no marks of ski poles on the ice, so I followed the shoreline, looking for some kind of a clue. It wasn't until I reached the southern tip of Royal Lake that my effort was rewarded. Leading up from the ice were a set of footprints, then a set of ski marks. They led to the boathouse. Inside, I found two interesting items. One, a dismantled ice boat with fresh ice on the runners. Two, a pair of skis with snow in the grooves. I made my way along the beaten path, back to the chateau, circled it once, found interesting item number 3, and went in.
Well, what were you doing up, Spade? Did you hear the shots, too?
Yeah. I thought I'd look around. It was cold.
Well,
shoot me out of a sound sleep, Sam. What was it, you know?
Well, I didn't find out about the first shot, Mrs. McCloud. That was fired at me. But the next three were fired at a man named Tozier Svenborg.
Oh, no.
Tozier? How did it happen, Spade? What's it all about?
He found Endicott's body in the woods.
Dead?
Very.
I told you, Sam. I told you.
Told him what? What do you know about it?
Nothing. I just had the feeling, that's all.
You know something. Now tell us or I'll slap the wrench right out of your head.
I don't know anything. Anything at all. I just had a feeling.
Who shot Tozier, Spade, and why?
I don't know. I was standing with him in the halfway cabin. Somebody shot through the window.
Didn't you see them? Don't you know who it was?
I was too busy ducking to look. Just answer me one thing. Have any of you been out?
Of course not.
No.
I haven't, and Mr. Allison's in bed.
Of course, they all lied. McCloud's shirt was stained with sweat. He'd been moving fast somewhere. The ski pants sticking out from under Cora's robe were wet, and Rita Parker was now dressed when she wasn't before. I was trying to figure out something to say when Charlie Allison came out from his bedroom, rubbing sleep out of his eyes and pulling a robe on.
What's going on here? What's all the excitement about?
They found Paul, dead. And somebody shot Tozier.
No. Where is Tozier?
In the halfway cabin.
Well, let's get him to a doctor.
I'll call one from town.
Why don't you go up and get Tozier? I'll have a car ready and we'll take him right into the Lucerne Hospital.
Wait a minute. What about the murderer? Who did the shooting? Nobody's getting out of my sight. It had to be one of us.
Why, Cora?
Well, it wasn't just anybody. We're the only ones left walking.
Why don't you ask Sam? He's the detective.
Detective?
Yes, I hired him because somebody sent me an anonymous letter saying there'd be trouble.
You knew there was going to be trouble, Rufus.
Somebody else knew.
Then why did you let people come up here?
Yeah, what's the big idea to do?
Wait a minute. Spade, what did you find out?
Well, if you'll all wait here a minute, I'll tell you. When I circled the chateau before I came in, I'd seen footprints leading to a window, not mine. That meant somebody else used the back way in and out, too. I wanted to find out whose window it was, and of course, while I was looking, I remember the apparently dismantled ice boat and the fact that a set of skis were in the boathouse. It took me about a minute to find the right room, but somebody knew it.
All right, Spade, stand where you are.
Allison, you might be a great food technician, but you're a lousy killer.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't get her.
And neither will you. I've got him, Spade. All right, come on, stand up. Come on. You sap. Cora, huh? You think you could get her by killing somebody?
Shut up, leave me alone.
I'm sorry for you. Sorry for anyone that ever knew her. I'm sorry for myself.
She loves me, you fool.
What's the matter? I was sound asleep.
We found our killer, Mrs. McCloud.
Charlie?
Yes, baby,
Oh, Rufus, it's been a long day. I need a drink.
And that goes to show you how cold it can get in the snow country, F. Period. End of report.
Sam. Why would a man do anything like that? When he knew he couldn't get away with it?
Because he was stupid, Effie. People must have told him a million times. If they told him once, crime just doesn't pay.
No.
Yes. Now, go type that up, will you? Go on. Scamper, scamper. Oof.
Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Here's news of two important musical events. This Saturday, Arturo Toscanini begins a new Saturday series of concerts with the NBC Symphony. And for his premiere, the celebrated maestro Toscanini will present a special hour-and-a-half performance of Verdi's Requiem. And beginning next Monday, you can hear the first in a new series by the Boston Pops Orchestra.
Up. All but the P.S. Page, that is.
What P.S. Page? Why should it need a P.S.?
Sam, you know that this report, to borrow a phrase from you, is full of holes.
My phrase? I wish I'd never said it.
Now, for instance, who sent the note to Rufus?
Paul Endicott. He expected trouble. That's why he was so belligerent to everybody.
All right.
Yes.
I'm going to come right out and ask you.
Good.
Why did Allison kill him?
Well, I thought it was rather obvious, Effie. Cora was leaving Rufus McCloud for Allison, but because Allison worked for McCloud until Cora's divorce was final, they didn't want Rufus to know about it. So they used Paul Endicott as a decoy love affair.
But I'll bet Endicott didn't want to give Cora up. I'll bet that was it, Sam.
Effie, I don't know how you ever guessed. Endicott saw in it a chance to pick up a buck with a little blackmail.
It was just a wild guess, Sam.
Yes.
And of course, Allison did ski, didn't he?
What do you think?
Well, how else could he get around so fast? And he made such a point about those snowshoes. Sam.
Yes?
If I'd written the caper, I'd have covered that up a little.
Come here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sam. I guess I shouldn't have said that.
You certainly should not have. Oh. You know there's only one thing around here you're supposed to say.
Yes, Sam, I know. I know. Shall I say it?
Make it fast.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade are produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Sam Spade was played by Stephen Dunn. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Script for tonight's adventure by John Michael Hayes. Musical scoring by Lud Gluskin, conducted by Robert Armbruster. Join us again next week, same time, for another adventure with Sam Spade. Do you keep an appointment book? In 1950, 30,000 people kept an appointment they hadn't bargained for with infantile paralysis, and 4 out of 5 of these were helped with March of Dimes money. We must go on helping, yet we also must be prepared for what may come in this year. March of Dimes is your way of fighting infantile paralysis. Give all you can to your local March of Dimes headquarters. Join the 1951 March of Dimes today. The Magnificent Montague next, then it's Duffy's Tavern on NBC.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.